Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. In the next 30 minutes, we'll go beyond the headlines with sharp insights and expert analysis from the leaders and decision makers shaping the future. Live or on demand, we bring you the stories that keep you informed and ahead. Here's what you can look forward to. South Africa is refocusing efforts on Antarctica. We'll speak to the minister in charge of that. Youth unemployment and the risk of unoccupied youth. We take a look at the stories behind the statistics. Real estate is on the rise in Mauritius. We find out why in a few moments. And it's National Savings Month and the tide is turning. South Africans want to manage their money better. South Africa, through the Ministry of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, is refocusing its efforts on Antarctica. The seventh continent has been promoted to one of three special projects within the office of the Minister Dion George, alongside with carbon credits and anti-poaching. Minister George joins us on the line to tell us, firstly, why we renewed our focus on Antarctica. A very good afternoon to you and thank you very much for joining us.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for invitation. Yeah, I think it's very important that Antarctica is on our agenda. I mean, South Africa was one of the original signatories of the Antarctic Treaty in 1959. So we've been interested in Antarctica for a very long time. Also, we've got to remember that we are the only African country that has a presence there. So it is very important that we participate. And also, the climate is changing quite rapidly. So it's becoming more and more important to collect information, scientific information, etc., on the changes happening there. So South Africa is, in fact, in the forefront of scientific research, and we want to bolster that, amongst other things.
Right. We'll get into the other things in a few moments, but the Antarctic Treaty consultative meeting just wrapped up a few days ago. Maybe we can talk about some of the key takeaways for you from that meeting.
Well, the key thing is that the question that we've been asking is that why is it that it's not a ministerial meeting? Because it is a meeting of senior officials of Antarctic programs. Like South Africa, for example, we send our senior officials there. But it is necessary that we believe it should be elevated to a ministerial level because there are a number of political issues that need to be discussed. And the forum basically focuses on a lot of technical issues regarding the treaty. Also, in terms of the agreements, the treaty is going to be renewed. So the process has begun on looking at how the treaty needs to be bolstered. Because if we remember way back when in 59, the treaty, there was a number of parties, South Africa was one of the first ones. And it was agreed that Antarctica would be it would be mining free, it would be military free, mm-hmm. it would be a scientific zone, and all those good things that we believe must be maintained. So we have seen there's been some discussion regarding exploration in the area around Antarctica, possibly on Antarctica. So we just want to make sure from South Africa's perspective is that we don't lose sight of what we all agreed initially. South Africa's position is very clear. We do not support mining. We do not support militarization. In fact, what one of the big pieces that we are looking at is a marine reserve area to the north of our base, because we believe that that area needs to be protected, and it isn't actually protected. So we have been spearheading a drive to get that area protected as a marine reserve. We are obviously discussing with other countries who are taking a bit longer than others to agree that it's something we'd like to protect. So that's the important thing, is that South Africa's voice has always been clear, and we just want to make sure that it remains clear. At Milan, it was very important for South Africa to reassert itself. For a couple of years, we have been criticized that we've neglected Antarctica. Like, for example, last year, South Africa did not submit any papers at all, scientific papers. This year, we submitted seven. So we regaining the position that we should have always maintained in terms of Antarctic activities.
That's very encouraging, because I say this very carefully. We must be found to be on the right side of history when it comes to the seventh continent. You mentioned technical versus political issues. What are some of these technical issues, and what are the political issues that South Africa wants to put on the table?
Well, I think the technical issues are specifically around things such as protecting the marine areas, okay, making sure that there is no mining, that there is no militarization, and very importantly, the scientific aspects, because obviously our researchers on Antarctica remain there the whole year. We collect information that other people don't actually have, so we share that with the world. We've also got Marion Island, which is a South African island, and we've got Gough Island, which is actually British, but we lease that island and we have a base there for research. And so we collect topical information specifically about climate change. Also, the French have the Crozet Island, which is nearby also to Marion Island. So we actually have Britain and France as neighbors in that neighborhood. And so what we have been doing is collaborating on the information we've collected. So, for example, at the last research that we did, was we're finding that the Indian Ocean, of course, there's only one ocean, but there's various parts and they've got right, different names. And the Indian Ocean is getting warmer. And so what's happening is that it's becoming more choppy to the south, like near South Africa, because that's where the colder Atlantic meets the warmer Indian. Mm-hmm. So from the technical pieces, we're learning a lot. We share it with the world, etc. And we really are world leaders on that. On the political matters, it's very important that, I mean, I'm sure you will know that there were some countries that actually made claims on Antarctica. Mm-hmm. A number of them, Norway did, Argentina did, and various others. South Africa never did, because our view is that according to the Antarctic Treaty, no country can do that. And so we do stick to the rules, because we are, in fact, a country that respects the international rules. And as a non-aligned country also, it's far easier for us to talk to everybody. And that's very useful. So yeah, we do talk to countries like China and Russia, who have not yet agreed to this marine reserve area, etc. So we have those kind of very constructive conversations. Also, very importantly, is got to think about in the future, what happens when Antarctica becomes habitable at some point in the future? Maybe won't be in our lifetimes, but it is going to happen at some point, because some parts of Antarctica are actually greening, etc. The ice is melting, we know this, and it's getting thinner. And so we have to make sure that we collaborate effectively and make sure that nobody is, if you want to put it into inverted commas, misbehaving in Antarctica, because it can be quite attractive to think, oh, well, here's a massive resource. We would want to mine it, or we want to militarize it, etc., because it is obviously very important geostrategically. Now, we, South Africa, as relatively close by to Antarctica, that all matters very much to us, because, of course, we know that the passage around the tip of Africa is we believe, the main trade route, really. And, you know, if that becomes problematic, then, well, where does that leave us? So there's a lot of things that South Africa is, I think, well ahead of the curve on thinking about. Yeah. So, for example, when I became the environment minister, I actually raised Antarctica, and a number of people said, well, you know, we're glad we're talking about it, because it kind of slipped off the radar. And it mustn't, because it's important that all the countries that are there, and there are a number of them, any country can join the treaty that's in the UN, and the numbers increase. So we just must make sure that we have a sensible treaty, if it's updated, that it's in the right place.
Okay.
In South Africa, we are updating our own local Antarctic treaty as well, so that we can govern more effectively people leaving South Africa, okay, going to Antarctica as a springboard.
Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Forestry, Fisheries and Environment Minister Dion George.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
South Africa has a real risk on its hands. The quarterly labor force survey shows that 10.3 million young people between the ages of 15 and 24 were unemployed in the first quarter of 2025. We take a look at the stories behind the statistics and behind the numbers to get a sense of the lived realities of young people and what happens when they are not engaged. Zaki Mamdu is with the Socialist Youth Movement. He joins us to do exactly that. Thank you very much, Zaki, for your time this afternoon. And so when young people look at these statistics and they are the faces behind the statistics, what is their interpretation of youth unemployment in South Africa?
Thanks very much, Tudor, for having me on the program. Look, I think it's fair to say that we are in a crisis of profound proportions. And really, the hopelessness that young people are confronted by in the society is one which creates a great degree of social unraveling, of social rupture in the society, where young people, you know, try by all means to make ends meet, to put themselves out there, to be active and engage participants to participate meaningfully in economic, social, and political life, yet find the doors closed at every turn. That is absolutely the case when we look at the conditions in the education sector, where young people from the very beginning, from the outset, don't have the opportunities available to them to pursue their dreams, to pursue their aspirations, you know, and to build a life of meaning and of worth. And you know, that crisis then is meted out at every turn, where young people in the society simply don't have the options available in terms of employment, in terms of education, in terms of social, civic, and political participation. And it's very much rooted in the structural conditions of the society under the capitalist regime.
When you speak, or rather at some point in our lives, we would have been introduced to that concept that an idle mind is the playground of you can finish the sentence. So when you speak of the social unraveling, what does it look like currently as we speak? It's midday. And so what is it that young people are occupied with, those who are not in employment?
Sure. Look, I think the system makes young people hustle to stay poor. And so young people are busy and engaged and you know, coming forward to put themselves out there to do something. I think if you spend time in any township across this country, you will find young people who are looking, you know, for opportunities, who are hustling where they can, who are cutting hair, selling quotas, who are learning Forex, who are trying to get access to a car so they can register on a platform like Bolt or Uber, whatever it may be. But of course, when you have the reality of people being crushed under the boot of a system in which, whether you try hard or not, doesn't have adequate opportunity available, it doesn't matter how hard you try then. And so under that system and given those conditions, you find that people who search for meaning, search for things to do and also just search to put food on the table would turn to things like gangsterism and crime and you know, things of that nature. But of course, in a society that also at the same time tells you that your human worth, your value as a human being, is determined by how much you can accumulate, how much money you can make, the car you can drive, the job that you have, the clothes that you put on your back, the house over your the roof over your head. When your value is determined by those material things, it creates a situation in which young people feel incredibly isolated and invisible. And in turn, that leads to all manner of violence, all manner of invisibility and exclusion in society, which creates issues around drug abuse, around gender-based violence, and all, you know, these kinds of unsavory things that we find that plague our society.
A parallel system is created, one that is deeply unproductive. And so what is the recommendation? What is it that young people are telling you would work for them? Outside of the obvious, let's be employed or let me go and get work, what would work for them when you speak of this system?
Well, look, I think what we need to understand is that the system itself does not work. And the proof in that just lies in a simple glance out of your window and looking at the crisis that exists and manifests itself in different ways, shapes and forms all around us. And so really what is required is a new system in its entirety. I think one thing that's becoming increasingly clear in this stage of capitalism that we are in, where we are seeing the rise of financialization, where, you know, money or profit is no longer produced in the way it was through investing in production, in factories, in mines, in manufacturing, on farms, etc., etc. And therefore, it doesn't need people to be employed to create profits. What we are seeing in this stage of capitalism that we are in is that profits are made from simply moving money around, where, you know, the capitalist class makes a hell of a lot from speculation, from debt, and from unleashing, you know, fictitious capital throughout the economy. And the result of that is that you see a huge rise in what we'd call surplus population. So people who are rendered superfluous, who are outside of the productive economy, of the real economy itself, people who are, you know, pushed into racialized ghettos, into townships. In other parts of the continent, you'd find people pushed into huge, massive refugee camps, for example. And these people are, you know, external to the productive machinery, you know, that capital uses to make profit, because it relies on it can, in this day and age, make money just from moving money, but not from creating actual things, not from creating jobs, nor even creating, you know, commodities of any particular use value. And so in that reality that we are confronted by, what we need to understand is that there is no situation under the economic logic of capitalism where young people in the society, or the majority of people for that matter, whether you are young, old, or somewhere in the middle is less important, but there's no situation under that crushing boot of capitalism where every person in the society would have a job, would have access to healthcare, would have access to education, a roof over their head and everything else. And so really what is needed is a complete unraveling of the system and the logic of the system itself. And we can start by putting an end to austerity. In this country, we see the budget year after year is slashed in very real terms, in education, in healthcare, in service delivery, in housing, and all manner of social protections. And so what we need is an end to that. We need you know, to guarantee a social wage. We need to be able to guarantee our people access to free, quality, decolonized education from nursery through to the tertiary level. And we need to, you know, guarantee people's access to healthcare and invest in a massive public works program that employs people to produce things that are socially useful as well.
Thank you so much, Zaki. Zaki Mamdu is with the Socialist Youth Movement.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Hashtag Dinnertime Stories SA. Mind-blowing, innovative, and internationally acclaimed, Le Petit Chef is a gastronomic experience like no other. A unique, never-to-be-forgotten 3D and 4K tabletop projected dinner filled with fun, surprise, and storytelling. Fancy a journey across the globe without ever leaving your seat. You could win two tickets worth nearly 4,000 Rand to experience the world's tiniest chef with the biggest culinary adventure. Enjoy 6 unforgettable courses inspired by Marco Polo's travels, from the fragrant spices of India to the icy peaks of the Himalayas, all paired with fine wine in a luxury setting at Blueberry Hill Hotel. Enter now at events@moneyweb.co.za and tell us about the official hashtag for the event. Your taste buds are ready for takeoff. Hashtag Dinnertime Stories SA.
Top stories to keep your eyes and ears on.
The island nation of Mauritius is attracting a growing number of real estate investors. South Africa and France are leading the charge, being the top sources of direct investment in the island nation last year. In 2024, South Africans invested 4.66 billion rupees, that's about 1.8 billion rand, in Mauritius, 22.6% more than the previous year. We speak now to Lance Lawson, business development consultant at Sovereign Group, to unpack this growing emergence of interest in Mauritius. Lance, thank you very much. How should we understand it historically in light of these numbers?
Well, I think it's a growing trend for people to look for safe havens in the world of political and global unrest and uncertainty. things haven't been the easiest in the last few years.
Things haven't been the easiest in the last few years. And so what is the attraction with what has become to be known as the most peaceful country on the continent? Is that it?
Well, I think that's what you just hit it. I mean, it's a peaceful and calm place, and it does offer a lot of attractiveness from, you know, just diversification of political uncertainty and doubts. So obviously there's also some tax benefits, and people are looking to secure their wealth in a jurisdiction which they feel treats them slightly better from a safety and taxation point of view.
So what is it that people are investing in? What they want? A holiday home? They want rentals? What is it that they are most interested in that we're seeing?
Well, I think people just want to diversify their assets, and property is obviously a brilliant investment option, especially if it can generate some income. So some people are looking to capitalize on some of the Mauritian government's property development schemes. Some of them are just looking for a second home where they can set up a residency, get second residency, and just sort of diversify some of their sort of financial investments into bricks and mortar type property investments in a jurisdiction where, you know, it is more secure for the long term for them, and obviously gives them also a second option of residency and citizenship should they decide to relocate or financially immigrate to that country. So like in all countries, you know, property is an asset class that people like to invest in, and Mauritius offers that to investors as an attractive asset.
As an investor, what do you consider more so in the long term, right? And please excuse this ignorant question, because I'm thinking if you mentioned some compliance issues, you mentioned ease of setting up shop in Mauritius, for instance, it could very well be argued that in South Africa, that was the point at some stage, right? And property being a very valuable asset class, you saw people investing and now you're seeing it becoming a shell. And so what is it that you look out for, right? So if you look at the future of Mauritius, not in just the next 10 years, but in the next 30 years, as we flock into that island nation, what could be some of the risks that could be beyond your control, where now it is looking like the very place that you just came out of, jumping from the frying pan to wherever, I guess?
Well, that's true. No one has a crystal ball. Yeah. And, you know, one can consider, you know, fads and, you know, trends and things like that. However, I do believe that the way Mauritius has set itself up as a gateway to Africa, it's set to be a sort of a springboard into the development of the rest of Africa. So a lot of people are coming from the likes of France and mm-hmm. India and the rest of the world, particularly to set up in Mauritius so that they can springboard into Africa and tap into the growth that the continent delivers, so, and the opportunities that the continent delivers. So on the tail end of that, or pigging back on that, are obviously the real estate asset investments that one can take advantage of there. So I think, you know, who knows, things could change in the future, but no one can predict these things other than, you know, to take sort of guidance on what they see today and what they perceive to be good policies implemented now. So to answer your question, what should one look out for? I think just look out for you know, consistency and friendliness and how you are perceived to be treated as a citizen and investor in these countries, especially Mauritius.
Got you. Thank you so much for your time, Lance, this afternoon. Lance Lawson is Business Development Consultant at Sovereign Group.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
We are 7 days into the seventh month of the year, a month known as National Savings Month. The annual initiative is spearheaded by the Savings Institute of South Africa, and the goal is to promote healthier financial habits and encourage households to save. Denise Nietling is head of marketing at Pay Me Now, which is a leading earned wage access provider, and she joins us on the line for more. Thank you very much, Denise, for your time this afternoon. So Pay Me Now has got, or rather, you've found found users who've completed more than 2.5 million financial education modules with you guys. Given that it's 10 years of this campaign, National Savings Month, are we seeing South Africans saving?
Yes, definitely, Dudu. Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat to you guys. Like you say, we're entering an exciting month. It is Savings Month just this July. And yes, we are celebrating it with amazing stats that we've seen on PayMeNow with our users, like you mentioned, having finished more than 2.5 million financial education modules that are offered for free on our platform. So this really, really clearly demonstrates that there is a desire among South Africans to want to improve their financial literacy, and in that way want to know how to save and make better financial decisions so that they can build a strong foundation with the literacy that they require. So yes, definitely we've seen an increase, and it's so exciting.
Okay, so we're closing the financial illiteracy, for lack of a better word, a gap in the country.
Mm. Yes, definitely. No, it's this. Like I said, the fact that we've seen so many financial education modules being completed is so exciting. But it also is sad because it shows that South Africa wants to save, or if they're given the tools and the platforms to do it. I mean, despite this hunger to learn how to better manage your money, financial literacy resources remain, or the access to it, remain limited, especially to those that need it most. If we look at young people who are building the financial future in South Africa, women and you know, people that really need to learn how to better manage their money, the access to these are limited, and this perpetuates debt and prevents people's ability to save. Mm. So we are definitely seeing, given access to it, they want to save, they want to improve their financial literacy and money management habits. So yes, we just need to enable them to have access to it, and then we'll see a turn in the right direction.
Those who do have access to it, what are you finding is most popular among them in terms of modules? So what are people really interested in learning?
It's very interesting. You know, we're seeing the module that gets the most attention is the credit score module. So on PayMeNow, you can also do your credit score. And then there's also a module for understanding it, knowing how to improve it. And it's so important to have a good credit score because it improves your credit, enabling you to get better access to a home loan. Or, you know, when people do, when you go for a job interview, they do a credit check. So it's very important to have a healthy credit score. And we see that one getting the most attention. And then it's also very interesting, the one that comes in second is the modules we have on basic financial skills and basic financial management, which also signifies the desire to build a strong financial foundation. And that's very inspiring because it shows they're wanting to start from the right place, starting from the start, and then knowing how to build from the ground up a strong foundation. Savings and budget modules are also getting a lot of attention. Again, a great thing with it being Savings Month. And if you know how to budget, you control your money instead of it controlling you. So it's very inspiring to see those modules also getting a lot of attention. And then there's some modules about retirement and avoiding scams that are also getting some great attention and being completed on our platform. So again, it shows that we are changing the mindset to how you think about your money and how you go about managing it, so you can move into a stronger financial future.
It's important that people learn how to protect themselves from the risk of scams.
Oh, definitely.
Albeit relatively new, the two-pot system, I do wonder, is it a module that you offer, and are you seeing an uptake?
Yes, definitely. The two-pot retirement module that we introduced a while ago, it's getting great attention. And it basically just reiterates how people want to learn how to save for the future and for for retirement. Again, a very, very important thing to learn about. So it's just a module that explains to them how it works, what are the benefits, how you should go about doing it, the risks to consider and all that. So we're really, really seeing that one also getting a lot of attention, which also signifies people not wanting only to save now, but they're already thinking ahead, how I can save for my future and for retirement. So again, very, very inspiring to see these modules, or this particular module, getting a lot of attention.
Denise, essentially, the underlying message that I'm getting here is that the kind of person that would take up this offering in terms of the education and the services that you offer and the different modules that you offer is somebody who is ready to change not just their financial literacy, but their entire lives, meaning that your habits are also going to change, meaning that the way you do things has to change. Is that something that you also prepare people for, right? That your habits also inform how you will perform financially?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's one of those things. Once you know, you don't know what you don't know. That's basically what it comes down to. So it is important to have to know how to make better financial decisions. It's integral to making responsible financial decisions, and having a good financial literacy or improved financial literacy will influence whether you control money or, like I said, whether it controls you. So the positive effects of having, you know, increased or improved financial literacy, it gives you the confidence to manage your money wisely, to be less trapped by debt, to grow your money both for long-term with the retirement models we offer, and short-term, knowing how to manage your money on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, knowing how to utilize it so you don't have to, you know, go into debt or go to a loan shark or one of these, the more negative options, in order to manage your money. And like I said, it helps you set up goals for retirement. So we're definitely seeing, by enabling people or giving people the literacy or the platforms or the tools they need to educate themselves, it is changing their mindset. And people think differently about money earned than what they do about money borrowed, because we teach them how to look at it differently. And like I said, you don't know what you don't know. But once you know, you can start making decisions based on your new knowledge and the new tips and you know, just ideas of how you think about your money.
Denise, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Denise Niethling is Head of Marketing at PayMeNow. You've been listening to MoneyWeb at Midday. It's a great pleasure having been in your company. I'm Duduzile Ramela. Jeremy Maggs is back with you tomorrow at midday. Have yourselves a magic day further. Bahaya chupulekio.